Welcome to the CGOB Sports Show podcast. On this episode, we've got an interview with the executive director of the Canadian Center for Mental Health and Sport, Dr. Natalie Durand-Bush, talking about a new mental health initiative rolled out by Tennis Canada, and talk about how maybe other national sports organizations can follow their lead. Also talking with the longtime head coach of the Manitoba Bisons women's volleyball team. Their conference championship's coming up this weekend. And Reyes Surinx has been named the conference player of the year. Ken will tell us all about it on the podcast. A big step for mental health and sports in our country has been taken recently. After 15 months of research and planning, Tennis Canada is the first national sport organization to unveil an NSO-wide mental health strategy. This is based on the National Mental Health Strategy for High Performance Sport in Canada. This program will be rolled out with a targeted approach this year and beyond. It has three pillars. Number one, promoting healthy habits and bringing awareness to the importance of mental health and wellness. Number two is support, implementing strategies to support the mental health and wellness of Tennis Canada athletes, families, coaches, and staff. And number three is care, ensuring that athletes are receiving appropriate care or are referred to the right experts for evaluation and treatment. They've also appointed a wellness director, Marie-Josée Bellemare, a big deal as we continue to remove stigma surrounding mental health and recognize that it's a huge part of sport. And earlier today, I had the chance to chat with Dr. Natalie Durand-Bush, professor at the University of Ottawa and executive director of the Canadian Center for Mental Health and Sport. And we started by discussing how more sports organizations are recognizing the importance of mental health.
Health is more at the forefront of what we do, what we prioritize now, in not just in society, but in sport itself, because some pretty, prominent figures have publicly shared their stories, their experiences with mental health. It's kind of created that opening for more people to address it. And these, you know, in this case, these prominent figures, we're talking about athletes sharing their stories, but also advocating and saying that we need to prioritize mental health. Our mental health is important. If we don't have our mental health, it's hard to consistently perform at a high level. So they've athletes have asked for more support and for more resources. And I think more and more also sport organizations are recognizing that there is an importance, there is a need to include that as an important performance variable and an important an important indicator. So that has led sport organizations to ask for more support, for more funding to help them include mental health in their philosophies, in their plans, in their resources. And this is what led us to do this work with Tennis Canada.
I follow a lot of sports. I watch a lot of sports. I feel like tennis would be up there in terms of the sports that would have the most mental grind to an individual. They're on their own a lot. It's just them out there. There's so much time on the court. You're probably in your own head a lot. So how do you view Tennis Canada getting involved in this and saying, yeah, these players that are going through a lot, they need some support in this?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because we've done quite a few interviews since they launched their strategy last week. My PhD student who is working on the project, she's a retired tennis player, and she's been basically reiterating what you just said. She uses the word, it's a lonely sport in that you're spending a lot of time alone, whether it's on the road or on the court. You need a lot of mental endurance to be able to play through a match, throughout a match, with often without the ability to talk to anyone, really. And so you experience this often more in isolation compared to other individual and team sports. So from that standpoint, your mental resilience, your mental skills are very important. And we know that's directly impacted by mental health. So from that standpoint, absolutely, the sport of tennis is unique. And Tennis Canada recognized that, I think not just in Canada, like you do have Naomi Osaka, but also Bianca Andreescu, who shared her, you know, some of the challenges that she faced, and even more recently, a few other athletes. And so they really listened. They really saw that, okay, we can't just be reactive. We can't just respond to crises. We need to do a lot more promotion and prevention. And we need to start equipping not just athletes, but coaches, parents, staff with the knowledge and skills they need to, like, to thrive and to protect their mental health, instead of just letting things go and then, you know, increasing the risk of people developing more serious mental health challenges.
Because, yeah, on the court during a match, players are sometimes, well, a lot of times we see them yelling at their box, which is their coach there, and they've got their team there. But after the match, that's when you need the coaches and the support there to be able to help out, because I'm sure, and I've never played tennis at any level above just goofing around with my friends, mm-hmm. It's easy to be hard on yourself, really hard on yourself when you're out there, when you make mistakes. So equipping everybody around a player seems to be a very important step, and it seems Tennis Canada is taking these steps.
Absolutely. Yes, and what we're trying to do through that mental health strategy, I mean, there's just been so much work, hours, effort involved in developing, and now we're implementing this. So they are implementing this, and we're helping them track that. I think, yeah, even just talking about language, what kind of language should you be using when you're checking in with each other, when you're trying to help each other cope with stress, overcome setbacks and challenges? I mean, just talking about that and how we align and how we respect each other is so important, and people take that for granted. And we're trying to help people be more sensitive and trauma informed, you know, when we're talking publicly about these things. That's part of the process. It's part of the what we would call like mental health literacy that Tennis Canada is trying to also do to educate people through all their initiatives. So, you know, if you keep using language that's stigmatizing, that's just going to be triggering for people who are actually experiencing challenges, like you're not doing a good job. When you don't know, you can cause harm. And so that's actually also a big part of what they're trying to do is, and we know that with safe sport, there's so many things going on right now in sport. There's safe sport issues. There's everything around diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. All those things should be integrated so that people actually feel like good in their environment.
I'm curious, in 2024, how much of an impact does social media have on the mental health of young athletes?
Well, I mean, done a little bit of research in that area, and I think it's huge. It's even more, I guess it has the potential to have even more impact when athletes are not trained in this area. So again, part of the work that we try to do when we teach people these skills is to recognize when social media is helpful and when it's not. And we can call it social media literacy. So recognizing what there's a time and place, and you might have to put some boundaries around your usage so that you don't go on social media right before a match and potentially see something that is going to completely, distract you. And the same thing after. We know that there's, like, we have huge problems with social media. That's why the government is trying to put in place some laws to protect people, because there's so much bullying, there's so much hate, And people have, they can destroy somebody's career overnight now on social media. So I agree with you. There's a lot of, there's potential impact there. And so we have to help, especially youth who might not be as experienced, to recognize and have some limits around that. Because we know at a national level, like some of our, you know, like our national team athletes going to Olympic, Paralympic Games, there's a lot of structure there. There's a lot of things in place. And they know a lot more not to go on social media, for example, because of what they can see on those platforms.
I'm looking at what Tennis Canada has done as part of this rollout of this new strategy. And last year they hired a wellness director who is responsible for working with athletes and parents and coaches to provide wellness and lifestyle assistance. Is this something, first of all, how do you feel about a role like this? And is this something that is going to become more common across national organizations?
I think it's fantastic. It allows this person, Marie-Josée, Marie-Josée Bellemare, is that her name?
Yep.
Yeah, like it just allows her to focus on all of these things that were identified in Tennis Canada's strategy to implement, right, to move to action, because sometimes it's more of an after fact. If you don't have the resources to do this, it's tough because everybody's so busy and everybody is all like overworked in their roles already. So having somebody just dedicating her time, energy, efforts around that is huge. And I think, yes, we are going to see more and more sport organizations create these positions where people will focus on mental health and wellness. And we've already seen it. Like when we launched the National Mental Health Strategy for High-Performing Sport in Canada in 2021, that's kind of was the impetus for like a lot of sport organizations. Mind you, some did it before, but like since that was launched, like that's another reason why more sport organizations are really like paying attention and asking for support. Because those are the recommendations we made in that strategy. And we did recommend that people hire or create more dedicated positions pertaining to this. And following that, you saw our national sport institutes and sports centers across Canada have all created a position called like mental health lead. So even within our sports centers, we have these positions created specifically for people to focus on developing, you know, different resources, different initiatives to support the mental health of the community.
So Tennis Canada is the first NSO to unveil a mental health strategy based on the strategy you mentioned that was launched a few years ago. Are you working with other national organizations? Is that the next step from your perspective to get pretty much every NSO to do something like this?
At the moment, I am not personally working with other organizations. Mind you, through the center, the Canadian Center for Mental Health and Sport, we do have partnerships to help support NSOs, but not specifically to create their own mental health strategy. I have colleagues who have been hired to do that, though. So, for example, Curling Canada has hired one of my colleagues to work in the area of mental health. And then I have another example with Volleyball Canada, where my colleague was helping them develop a strategy of their own. And I think this was more of at a provincial level. So like, we're seeing a lot of these examples. It's fantastic.
That is Dr. Natalie Durand-Bush, professor at the University of Ottawa and executive director of the Canadian Center for Mental Health and Sports. Mental health is very important. I know people are told to play through the pain of injuries, but your brain is part of that too, and you don't want to be putting too much stress on your brain. And tennis is a very, very stressful sport for sure. The Canada West Conference has named its Women's Volleyball Player of the Year today, and it's Manitoba Bison's outside hitter, Reyes Surix. The second-year student from Winnipeg is the third Bison to receive the honor since the program joined the conference about a quarter century ago, joining Rachel Cockrell in 2015 and Kathy Preston back in 2002. The J.H. Bruns product led the country in kills with 388, 70 more than anyone else. And she missed the last two games of the regular season with an ankle injury. She is still rehabbing that injury that's kept her out of the playoffs so far, but her team has still managed to step up without her in reaching the Canada West Championship match at UBC Saturday. Earlier today, I had the chance to chat with head coach Ken Bentley about Rhea's success and lots more. Tell me more about her season and why she deserved this honor.
Well, I mean, coming off obviously a tremendous rookie campaign, you know, she was rookie of the year in the country and had a great first year. I mean, she just elevated her game this year. She's, you know, come a long way in terms of maturity and patience in her game. And, you know, she's just a better attacker. She's a better six rotation player. You know, so she's really dedicated herself to being better defensively. So she's more than just kind of a, you know, a one trick player who hits the ball well. I mean, she's really improved her six rotation game. And I think I'm hoping that, you know, the other coaches took note of that too. It wasn't just her attacking, even though clearly she's, you know, had an amazing season up until her injury with you know, her attacking and leading the country in kills and, you know, and also being fit enough to do it. She's worked really hard to be, you know, in tremendous shape to be able to carry that load, which she's done a fabulous job of that part of her game too.
So for someone to be in their second year and be able to earn this honor, I imagine that goes a long way to showing what kind of player they are.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's fairly rare for a kid in their second year to be player of the year in such a tough conference. I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. This is a tough place to play. It's a tough place to get out of to go to nationals, you know. It's super challenging. So, you know, for her to have the level of success she's had against so many good teams speaks volumes to her commitment to the game. And again, I'll go back to her dedication to her fitness, which is, you know, a huge component of her success, 100%.
Now, is there any chance she gets to play on Saturday, or is this more so across your fingers for nationals?
Yeah, it's looking positive. We have one more practice day today before we leave. She's back to full activity at this point, so that's been really encouraging for us. And so if she feels good, confident, I think we'll give it a go on Saturday. You know, the wonderful part about this team, though, is that, you know, we played amazing volleyball in her absence to keep, you know, the team rolling forward. And, you know, so if we were pressing a service without her, it would be business as usual, because we've done a really, really good job of that. I mean, I'm just so proud of our team for how we've played this last stretch, you know, without Rhea. But if we can get her in there, we'd love to have her.
In recruiting Rhea to come to your program, when did you first notice that she could be something special?
Oh, when she was 15. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I saw her play through club early on, and it became apparent pretty quickly that this kid could be a really, really good player. And I would say that she's probably surpassed, you know, a level I thought possible when she was 15, when I first really started to see her play. So obviously we're thrilled to keep a top player in the country and the province and to get her to U of M and provide a really good training ground for her improvement. And yeah, so she's one of those kids early on you saw and you thought this kid could be a really good player. So, and the nice part about it is, I think the nicest part about it, if I could say one thing, Christian, would be this, that she's a kid with enormous talent, but she really, really works hard to exploit it. And so that's probably what I'm most proud of with her, is she doesn't take her talent for granted. She works really, really hard to be a good player. And so, you know, for me, just incredibly rewarding to see somebody who's got that level of talent just put it in and be humble about it. And, you know, she works as hard as anybody that I've coached. So, And that's a big compliment because I've coached some great players. So, you know, I'm just really, really, you know, thrilled about that part of Rhea, just, you know, as a person and as an athlete. So it's just tremendous.
All right, let's talk about the conference championship. You're going to UBC on Saturday. First of all, best of three in the quarterfinals, best of three in the semifinals, but just a one match do or die in the finals. Is that something you're cool with, or would you rather see a best of three in the finals too?
Well, I'm a little old school. I'd love to see a best of three in the finals. And we used to do that back in the day before we went to this Final Four format, which I was not in favor of. I mean, in a word, I hated it. But at least the saving grace here, Christian, is that we're playing a quarterfinal and a semifinal for, you know, burst to nationals, with the exception of playing for third place. I mean, both, you know, us and UBC have qualified. But that doesn't mean that the Canada West Championship is any less important. I think it's hugely important. And I would rather play a best of three. I think my athletes would probably rather just play the one at this point of the year. So you might get a different opinion from them. You know, but when you go to nationals, you're playing a one-game format, right? So in a sense, it is preparation for that. You know, you've got to play 3 days in a row, but, you know, you lose on any one of those first 2 days and, you know, you're not playing for the championship. So that part of it, I think, is a positive in terms of prep. And that's just the format that we have now. So, you know, in fairness to the athletes, it's a long season and having to play and grind it out in the best of three for a final, you know, we'd have to recover from that and play three more matches in another 5 days. So, you know, that part of it does make sense to me. I just know that back in the day when we did play best of threes right throughout, Canada West never, in my memory, lost a national championship as a conference, you know, because we were just so battle hardened in just competing with each other in the league, that I just thought it was fantastic prep. Not that we'll be any less prepared, because I believe we will. That's kind of where we are now. And it's our job to go out and obviously just do our best to win the match on Saturday.
So you've been to UBC once already this year, team that's been ranked number one in the country. You lost in straight sets on January 19th and then beat them in five on January 20th. Obviously, two of the best teams in the country going at it on Saturday. Where do you find the matchup edge in this one?
I don't think there's a particular matchup edge, honestly. You know, I think we're pretty evenly matched as a team, but between our two teams, sorry. So, yeah, I don't see a, you know, one kind of glaring issue on either side that would be a big advantage. I don't really look at it that way. I guess I look at it more like, if we can just take care of our side and do a really good job on our side like we've done, then obviously I feel great about our opportunity to win. And I'm sure UBC feels the same way. So, you know, we have to go there and play in their place, but we've also, you know, we beat them in the quarterfinals last year at Nationals there. We're comfortable in that gym. Certainly it's not a gym that we're scared to go into and play. I mean, if we had to go play somewhere in the championship final, this certainly, you know, isn't among the worst gyms that I would pick to go play a match in. So, you know, we're ready to go and ready to get after it.
Do you have to make sure you're not looking ahead to Nationals? Because as you mentioned, you've already clinched your spot there. A national championship is the number one thing you could ever win, but you still have this thing happening Saturday. So do you have to make sure your players aren't looking ahead, or are they very much locked in on Saturday and aren't looking ahead to the weekend after in Hamilton, Ontario?
Yeah, we're pretty locked in here. We're not talking a bunch about Nationals other than, you know, making plans and making sure that all the profs know that you know, we won't be in school for the week because we're going to be gone on Tuesday. I mean, so we've done that preliminary work to make sure that, you know, their academic situations are in order. Outside of that, yeah, we're pretty locked in on this match. And, And we just want to get out there and do our best and try to win this one. And then we'll turn the page, you know, the day after and really look forward to going back to the national championships. Obviously, we've worked really hard to get there again. You know, last year we had to play that one match playoff against Winnipeg to go. And so to obviously have that already set aside is great for our team. And we were able to host right through till the final, which has been great for our team too. So, you know, this little bit of extra travel is not really a big deal at this point. And yeah, we just go there with one goal in mind right now, and that's to try to win a Canada's championship.
Well, Ken, appreciate your time today. Thanks for this and best of luck this weekend.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate the call.
That is Ken Bentley, longtime head coach of the Manitoba Bisons women's volleyball team. And don't forget, on Friday as well, the Winnipeg Westmen are taking on Queen's University in men's basketball, the national quarterfinals, and the U Sports National Track and Field Championships get underway tomorrow at the U of M as well. Well, thank you very much for listening to the CJOB Sports Show podcast. If you like what you heard, guess what? You can hear more every weeknight on CJOB from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Thanks again for tuning in. Subscribe if you'd like. We're available on iTunes and other places, I'd imagine. So farewell until we meet again.
Come on, and thanks for all the fish. So sad that it should come to this. We try to warn you all.